Well, Sean Sherman is author of the new book, The Sous Chef's Indigenous Kitchen. It's published by the University of Minnesota Press. He was born in Pine Ridge, South Dakota, and has been cooking in the upper Midwest for well over 20 years. His business, The Sous Chef, is based in South Minneapolis, and he joins us by phone this morning, or this afternoon, excuse me. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning. Good evening. Good afternoon. Evening.
Oh, it's
right?
Dark. I gotta be. In fairness, Sean, I'm a morning host, and when I'm looking out the window, it's always dark. So I'm sort of in that mode. Sorry.
It's all good.
Anyway, I have the book right here with me, and it's a lot more than about recipes. It's a cultural and personal history, as well as a lot of nutritional information on foods that many of us don't know hardly anything about. What got you started on this track? Because we're talking about a lot of wild foods, a lot of food that is a part of the Plains Native American culture. And you talk a lot about that in the book. I learned a lot about that. So give me a brief sort of background on how you got into this and what's the purpose of the whole movement. Because it is a movement. You're not the only one doing this.
That's true. Yeah, so for me personally, I just kind of had an epiphany quite a few years back after being a chef in the cities for quite a while and spending most of my life in a kitchen in restaurants, and realizing one day that I really didn't know that much about my own personal heritage food when it came to growing up on Pine Ridge and being Lakota and wanting to figure it all out. So it kind of became a personal journey in the beginning of just trying to understand, like, you know, what were Lakota eating before European influence came around? And, you know, what were they gathering? Who were they trading with? What kind of foods did they have stored? And trying to figure all of that out. And it really just became this, it's going to be a lifetime worth of learning at this point. There's so much to learn. So right now we just look at all of North America with the understanding that there's indigenous culture no matter where you are, and indigenous history and land and people. And it's just understanding how people were living and surviving with the foods around them, and just seeing, like, not only the immense amount of diversity across North America, but also a lot of the commonalities when it came to the understanding of wild foods, if there was agriculture, food preservation and cooking techniques, wild game. There's just so much to it. And for us, we just really have been exploring all that for the past few years, especially after opening up our business called The Sous Chef a few years ago here in Minneapolis, and being able to travel all over the place to explore a lot of other cultures within the indigenous landscape out here. So for us, it's a really exciting time.
Well, you set the stage in this book by discussing what you call the foundations of an indigenous food system model. And there's a graphic on this. But as I read through that, I don't think of food that way. So explain how that works as a foundation for indigenous food.
Well, we were just looking at all the facets of all the pieces that people had when they were understanding food. Because back in the old days, you know, food was the center of everything. Like, everybody's job was food. You're hunting, you're gathering, growing foods, you're collecting foods, you're preserving foods, you're building tools and utensils surrounding by food. Like, food was kind of everything. So for us, it was more than just understanding culinary, but understanding how the whole system worked itself, and really trying to gain and revitalize a lot of that knowledge when it surrounds just indigenous food ways. So if it's learning about the plants around you that tie into both food and medicine, or learning about how people are utilizing animals, you know, how all of it was working. So we're just really trying to explore a lot of those pieces. And it is much deeper than just understanding, you know, how to cook something in a Native American way, because everything's kind of tied together. So it's a big and diverse subject.
Well, as I was going through the book, I kept thinking about a point that you repeatedly make, and that's a point about nutrition. Well, you know, I thought to myself, well, it should be obvious that a culture that's existed for thousands of years would be grounded in good nutrition and good health. You just mentioned both a minute ago, based on what's available. And then not only to the culture, but how to maintain that availability. I don't think, for example, a lot of us think of, who are not native, think of wild rice as something that really goes good with chicken. That's what we think of. But the fact is, and this, what you outline this rather well, it's an incredibly nutritious food, protein, vitamins. Talk about wild foods and nutrition, because obviously if it's going to be the basis of the way you eat and treat health as a culture, how do you know that? I mean, do you just do it by trial and error or what?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of great educational points out there, especially in this era with the internet. Like, you can Google almost anything, but there's a lot of information out there right now when it comes to learning about wild foods and everything. But for indigenous cultures, it's a commonality where you see people really understanding the ecosystem directly around them, mm-hmm. and how to utilize all these plants. So it was really just, you know, thousands of generations of passed down information of how to live directly with the plants and animals right around you. And areas that had agriculture, too, was just kind of an added bonus to be able to manipulate a lot of the landscape into growing stuff for food systems. But everybody really had that really diverse knowledge of all these plants and all the just applications for them, whether it was food or medicine or utilization of something else, like creating dyes and clothing and just pieces. So there's a lot of knowledge that sits no matter where you are in North America, and we just want to try to open up people's minds a little bit about thinking about this really extensive knowledge that's been sitting here no matter where you are for so long.
Well, that leads me to the question, so how can non-native people use the plants and animals you write about in their own diets? What kind of access do we have?
Yeah, I mean, it's just being curious about plants that are growing around you. You know, it's kind of like, you know, when I was a kid, I was really curious about the names of the plants and how the applications were and things like that. And it would, you know, benefit anybody to have a deeper understanding of, you know, the area that you live in and culinary. And it's just so exciting to be able to utilize a lot of these flavors that are extremely healthy and add a lot of nutritional benefits to your dinners. And really, you can make food taste just like it is. So we try to make really regional, ultra-regional foods. So we'll make things with, like, sunchoke, cedar, rose hips, high bush cranberry, walleye, and it's, like, stuff you can find walking around a lake in northern Minnesota or wherever you might be. And we look at that no matter where we are. So if we're in the Southwest or if we're in the Pacific Northwest or the East Coast, or even Mexico or Canada, like, we just think about, you know, what's available right around us. And you know, if we were here a few hundred years ago, like what kind of plants would be utilized for food and nutrition, and bringing all that knowledge into a modern day. So not trying to do a timepiece and cook like it's 1491, but to really just have a deeper understanding of where we are and this bounty of food that surrounds us constantly. So, you know, just not being comfortable with just calling things a weed if you don't know the name for it, but taking the time to learn it.
Well, you did write a lot about growing up on the Pine Ridge reservations, and you just mentioned that your interest was piqued there. But you also spent some time in Mexico, and it seemed to me that that was a big turning point in your interest in this whole thing of indigenous food.
Yeah, I mean, Mexico is amazing. So is Alaska, because those two areas have really been able to retain a lot of indigenous food knowledge. So in Mexico, you can still find a lot of villages who have been pretty much manipulating food the same way that they have been since the beginning. So you see a lot of areas where people are growing these ancient corn and ancient seeds, utilizing insects for protein, grinding corn with tools that they made themselves out of stone. There's just a lot of cool stuff to learn from that area, whereas the U.S. and Canada did a really thorough job of trying to wipe away a lot of indigenous culture. So we just look at, you know, what's alive today, and it's amazing how much was able to be retained in places like Mexico. So for me, being able to live in Mexico for a long period of time really kind of helped open up my eyes to indigenous culture and tie it into how I grew up inside Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota.
Well, of course, most of us have access to what you refer to as the Three Sisters, corn, squash, and beans in our markets. What about the availability of food that we may only find if we gather it? I mean, should we be developing markets for these kinds of foods?
You know, I think there's a lot of opportunity for people to produce more indigenous foods, especially for tribal regions. And we hope that the work and the businesses that we're developing will really help bring that along, because one of our priorities has been purchasing from indigenous vendors first. And we feel like we're creating a large demand for people to want to become more into like food production, especially surrounding the indigenous foods, because there's so much out there, whether you're just collecting things for wild teas like cedar and spruce and balsam fir, chaga, wild mushrooms, berries, you know, there's all sorts of roots and tubers and wild onions, and there's all sorts of food all around us constantly that indigenous people have been utilizing for generations. And we see that we could bring a lot of health and knowledge back, especially in some of these communities that struggle with a lot of food access issues. So we see a lot of health being able to get back there. So for us, like, you know, we've just been trying to cook by cutting out all European ingredients. So we've dropped wheat flour and dairy and processed sugar and even beef, pork, and chicken, just to showcase, like, we can do a whole bunch of stuff no matter where you are in the country with what's around us and really having a deeper understanding of history and food.
Well, of course, we're here in Cook County, and which is a pretty great place for wild rice, so we're pretty familiar with that. Maple syrup, a lot of people tap maple trees. This is all readily available to us, and most of us are familiar with them. But things like watercress and my favorite, ramps. I ran across ramps when I lived in the Mille Lacs Lake area, and you could walk through areas and smell it. And we finally figured out what it was. And, I mean, I think that's a great thing to have in the diet in terms of how it tastes. But are those things, I mean, are we going to see those in a supermarket someplace, or is it better if we go and get them ourselves?
You know, I do see them in places, like we're in the city, so I'll see the co-ops like the Wedge and Seward and stuff like that bring in a lot of those wild goods during the springtime. But really the fun of it's just kind of getting outdoors and especially teaching the kids. Like, it's fun to be able to teach, some kids a few items that are easy to find and collect. And then not only are they running around outdoors, but they're, you know, bringing home a nice salad basically for free.
Okay. A couple of things I want to ask you about. Talk about the Tatanka truck and the Sous Chef restaurant themselves.
Sure. So I started the Sous Chef back in late 2014. We, right after that, developed a food truck called Tatanka Truck here in the cities, and it became really popular. It actually won an award for being the best food truck in the cities right away. And we did that in conjunction with the urban native population here in Minneapolis called Little Earth. Mm-hmm. And we did that, you know, so it'd be a place that was able to sell a lot of healthy indigenous foods and create jobs and money. And it was a really cool project. And we ended up buying the food truck officially from Little Earth. And we actually, this last summer, just sold it to White Earth Reservation. And they're going to use that truck to drive around the reservation and to bring a lot of farm goods, because they have a lot of cool agricultural projects. As far as our restaurants go, we have actually a couple of restaurant projects coming up, because we just released a nonprofit called NATIFS, which stands for North American Traditional Indigenous Food Systems, and we're developing a restaurant and training center to teach people about indigenous food and education. And we also won a bid with the City of Minneapolis and the Park Board to open up a restaurant right on the riverfront downtown Minneapolis in front of the Stone Arch Bridge, which is going to be a really cool space to have a Dakota and indigenous-based restaurant in a really sacred Dakota area.
Now, what surprised me also was the prevalence of other indigenous chefs other than yourself, and you've incorporated their work in the book as well. That was surprising. I would expect that in the Southwest, but there are a lot of these restaurants and chefs working throughout the country.
Yeah, and we wanted to, you know, showcase that this work wasn't about us and it wasn't about myself trying to make a name for myself, but there's, you know, it's really just about the information and the knowledge, and there's a lot of people and there's a lot of tribes. You know, there's still 567 tribes in the U.S. There's still 634 in Canada. Mexico, like a third of the whole population identifies as indigenous, which is huge. So there's a lot of indigenous culture alive today, and we just wanted to show that massive diversity that's out there. And every area that you find yourself within North America there's that history, that culture, and the food right there. So we just want to showcase to people that you can find it and we can make it relevant in today's world.
We're speaking with Sean Sherman. He's the author of the new book, The Sioux Chef's Indigenous Kitchen. And before we let you go, Sean, I want to return to wild rice. I'd be remiss if I didn't bring this up. I'm not trying to politicize this too much, but it's been in the news a great deal since precious metal mining has taken center stage here in the Northeast. Sulfide pollution's a potential effect on wild rice lakes. Now, you show that wild rice is central to the reason woodland and plains tribes settled here in the first place. So how is this and other wild foods an ingredient in the political recipe?
Well, we feel like that our natural resources are so important. And when we look at wild rice in Minnesota, we have to realize how special and unique that commodity is across this whole area, because it's so rare in the entire world of where you find it. And we're one of the last spots in the entire world where the stuff grows naturally. So we should really be actively trying to protect a lot of those areas where it grows and helping it grow more, because it's disappeared so much. And we've even lost probably half of where wild rice has grown within probably easily 100 years, you know. So it's really important to see why those battles, especially with groups like Honor the Earth, are spending so much time trying to protect just the waterways of these really important pieces. Because if we lose it, you know, it's going to be gone for those future generations. And, you know, it's something that had been around for so long that we really, I feel like we really actively need to protect these pieces and protect any natural resources that we have. And there's so many out there across North America that we have lost. So it's really kind of breaking from that colonial mindset of just taking resources without worrying about what happens in the future, but really thinking about how this all ties in down the long road.
Well, the book's called The Sioux Chef's Indigenous Kitchen. It's published by the University of Minnesota Press, and we've been speaking with Sean Sherman, its author. Thank you very much. Great book, lots of great information, and again, I want to say, as I did at the beginning, it's a lot more than recipes. It's a cultural walk through food. And thank you very much for your time, Sean.
All right. Thank you.